Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Well, good morning and welcome. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We are conveniently located at four different locations. We are in Albany, Saratoga, Clifton Park, and Kingston, New York. In fact, I was up at the Clifton Park office yesterday afternoon. I had appointments up there. Anyway, we welcome you to the Herzog Law Firm Estate Medicaid Planning Hour, which comes to each Saturday morning here at Magic 590. And we'd love to take your calls if you have a question, something you're looking at in the paper, on TV, or whatever, on the areas of estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, wills, trusts, advance directives, beneficiary designations, IRAs, any of those good things. Debbie and I are here for the next hour to hopefully entertain you and answer your questions. And you can reach us in the studio here at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside our local calling area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. I think that's it. Is that right? Anyway, we're actually not in the studio. We're actually doing the show remotely. And as I said earlier, Ben and Debbie and I are each way more than 6 feet apart. In fact, we're probably 6 miles apart.
At least.
At least.
Yeah, at least. So anyway, what's going on in Saratoga this morning? Anything?
Nothing exciting going on in Saratoga. It's nice to see people down, not really, really early like this, but people in Saratoga, you know, the restaurants and the shops are open. Of course, there's limited on capacity and stuff, but it's nice to see that the town is coming alive. And also driving by the track, because I have to drive by, well, there's other ways to go, but driving by the track, the horses are out exercising. So it's really kind of cool. It's like the city and the town is all coming back to life. So
yeah,
it's just nice.
Well, the track opens pretty soon, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Next week or the week after, I think. I don't,
yeah, it works. Opens on Thursday.
Well, you can't go. So what, do you got to watch it on the TV? Or
I wonder how you guys are going to do your get together. You're going to have to do it by Zoom or something for this year.
We are.
I know. Well, I know. We got a spring picnic or a summer picnic. I don't know what we're going to do.
I know. But we are actually a nice segue into this Wednesday, which July 15th. Two very important things happening on July 15th. We are putting on our virtual remote client appreciation event, which those of you who are clients of the office should have gotten an invitation to sign up for. And that's going to be on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, July 15th at 10 o'clock in the morning. So if you got an invitation, it will tell you in there how to sign up for the to attend the event. And Debbie and I will be there along with David and Jane Marie and also Kim Hance, who's our care manager here at the firm. So please sign up as soon as you can. The other important thing that's happening on July 15th, in case you've forgotten, is you got to file your income tax return, the federal income tax return. The IRS is not giving any further COVID extensions. So if you didn't file it in April, you got to file it on Wednesday. All right? So
it's a bummer.
It is a bummer. Yeah, I got to file mine. I didn't, you know, I filed my New York State return on April 15th because I was getting a small refund. So that's all in. The federal one I didn't file. I'm going to file that on Wednesday because I have to write a check. You know, so.
So you'll be at the mailbox at midnight getting the.
I'll be in the mailbox at 11:59 with my postage stamp. And, well, they don't offer you a discount for paying early, so why bother?
Debbie and Harry,
yes.
we have our first caller this morning. It is Roland in Hudson Falls.
Oh, all right. Good morning, Roland.
Good morning, Roland. Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, I just have a question. Now, do you guys deal with what Medicare pays for as far as keeping parents in the home as well, or no?
Well, when you're talking about Medicare, Medicare doesn't really pay to keep parents in the home. Are you talking about community Medicaid?
Well, no, because what we're facing is that we're getting close to making that decision whether my parents are going to be safe at home or if they're not going to be safe at home, and we want to keep them home as long as we possibly can. And, you know, we're looking at what kind of options we have as far as stair lifts and equipment and things like this, and what Medicare will cover and what it won't cover, and, you know, what the other options are. And because I know how expensive, you know, like a facility is and things like that. Hmm. You know, there's this big incentive to keep people home as long as they possibly can.
Are you looking for, do they need caregivers to come into the house too? Or are you just looking for basic stair lift and grab bars and stuff like that?
Well, I've been installing the grab bars and things like that myself. Now, something like a stair lift, that's a little bit more complicated for myself. You know, I'd have
to
do that. Oh, you can't. No, you can't. Unless you're a mechanic or an electrician, you can't install that. Right. But there are, I know there's a stair lift in Albany. And actually, if you have a certain, is it a straight run or is it a curve? Does it go at an angle?
It does. It kind of goes up like three or four steps, and then it it goes at
then
like
it turns.
A 90-degree angle to the
left. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's
hard. Yeah, because sometimes you can buy a used one, all right, which is a lot less expensive than a new one, but if it's an odd staircase, they may not have, you know, they're more custom-made. But it sounds to me like what you're really thinking of is what Debbie was suggesting, which is what's called the Community Medicaid Program. And that's a program where you could enroll your parents to receive essentially personal care services at home, you know, in terms of assisting them with bathing, dressing, toileting, meal preparation, medication management, and things like that.
Right.
So if they're at a point where they're it may be becoming forgetful, they have cognitive impairment issues. A lot of people forget to take their pills. They don't take the right pills. They don't take the right dosage. They forget to make lunch, and they need assistance with these things. And what we've been doing in the firm for the last several years is we've been able to enroll people in the Medicaid program. Medicare that we were talking about actually just pays for hospital bills, doctor visits and laboratory tests and x-rays and MRIs. Medicare doesn't pay for personal care services at home. All right? If you've been in a hospital, if you have a post-hospital discharge, Medicare might send somebody, might send a nurse over a couple times a week for a few weeks. If you have bandages that have to be changed or dressings and or things like that. But that's all they're prepared to do. Then you have to either privately pay. You know, right now with an agency, you're probably looking at $25, $30 an hour for an agency home health care. But
right.
The community Medicaid program would enable you, if you had access to people or you knew people who had 5, 10, 20 hours a week to come in and assist your parents, you could actually manage the program yourself and hire your own people.
Mm-hmm.
And Medicaid pays them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now, because I've heard all these horror stories as well as far as Medicaid, like what they do is they do a spend down on whatever savings my parents would have, and then, you know, if they didn't have anything left, then they would say, okay, we're going to take your house and things like this. And then
No.
The big thing that my father is afraid of is that,
sure.
You know, he's a very proud, stubborn man, and he doesn't want to go anywhere, you know? And
sounds familiar to me. I got a mother-in-law like that. Yeah, and I had a mother like that, too.
Yeah.
No, but here's the deal, Roland. The Community Medicaid program, at least for the next 2.5 months, there is no look back. There is no transfer penalty. There is no spend down. You can transfer your parents' assets to family members or to a trust and until October 1st. And if you applied for community Medicaid before October 1st of this year, there's no transfer penalty. So they could keep all their assets. All right?
Right. Uh-huh.
And they can probably virtually keep all of their income also, because depending on what their income is, they could be enrolled in what's called a not-for-profit pooled special needs trust, which would enable them to use all their available income to pay their bills, like their, you know, the electricity, their homeowner's insurance, their property taxes, and all those things. And so it's really a great program. Now, after October 1st, if you wait that long, after October 1st, there's going to be a transfer penalty. They're going to look back 2.5 years, and if you transferred assets to become eligible, then you're going to be penalized for a period of time. So
okay.
you might want to come in and talk to one of us, you know,
okay.
sooner rather than later.
All right, sir. All right.
Well, got an office in Hudson Falls. We were in Hudson Falls, you know. You can come to the Saratoga office. Debbie's up there. Go ahead. She'd love to talk to you.
Okay. Now, what's her name again?
No, it's me. I'm one of the attorneys in the office, and I'm actually in the Saratoga office talking to you right now. But we have an office in Saratoga at 47 West Harrison Street. We're right up the street from the new movie theater on Church Street in Saratoga.
All right. All right. Well, then I shall stop in, and I'll bring my brother with me because, you know, we've been doing most of the heavy lifting over there and like that. So anyway, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, call the office on Monday, make an appointment, because
right.
I'll tell you right now, my wife's mother is currently living with us in Albany, and she is on this program, and she's getting 60 hours a week of personal care services, and it's being paid by the community Medicaid program. Okay, so we know from personal experience that the program works, and we can help you set it up the right way so it works best for your parents.
All right.
Cool.
All right. Well, okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have a great weekend.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
So what I was going to say too, Harry, is we do have webinars that are going to be, we don't have any this week because of the client seminar, but the week after that, we have like a whole week of webinars, and people can go on to our website at www.herzoglaw.com, and actually on Thursday, July 23rd, at 2 in the afternoon, Aging in Place, which explains how community Medicaid and everything works, and also, if you can't get on one of the webinars, we have them pre-recorded on the website. So if you, again, go to www.herzoglaw.com and you go to our blog page, a lot of the webinars are recorded there, so you can kind of watch them at your leisure. I had a gentleman that contacted me about a parent passing away, and they had all kinds of questions, and he said, is there anything that I can do, you know, any paperwork or whatever, so I directed him to the website, and he watched the one about what to do when a loved one dies, and took copious notes, and then called me with all the questions he had from the webinar. So it was like, you know, it kind of helps, it gives you a basis, and you can kind of watch them. Like I said, the webinars are live, they're up on our website, we have them all set up for July and all set up for August.
It goes to the end of August, yeah, almost like the Labor Day, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're welcome to sign up for those. You just go onto our website and click on there, and it can register you. And you're free to watch them. And if you decide you don't want to watch them, then that's not a big deal either. Or, you know, these are kind of like the seminars that we used to do in person at the hotels, except there's no cookies and no brownies, which is very sad.
I know.
You have to bring your own.
Bring your own virtual cookies.
Your own virtual cookies.
Right. Yeah. But we won't put cookies on your browser.
No cookies on your browser. Oh, that was smart, Harry. That was good. I didn't even get that. Very impressive. I wanted to mention that I've had people people that have downloaded the Power of Attorney form from a website, and it's the Power of Attorney form from 2009, not even the newest one from 2010, and they've signed it and had someone notarize it, and it's not a valid power of attorney because it's not the correct form. And it obviously it doesn't have the statutory gifts rider. Back then it was the statutory major gifts rider, remember?
Yes.
And so people are having to redo the powers of attorney. So you really, if you're doing it yourself, which I don't suggest, you need to make sure that you have the right form. So you want to make sure that you have the form from 2010. Not the form from 2009.
Right, and it also, I mean, our particular power of attorney form has some modifications in it that are very important to have also, which you will not find on a downloadable one on the internet someplace. I mean, here's the problem, folks. What the law says is if you don't use the so-called statutory short form, which is laughable because the statutory short form is now about 10 or 11 pages long.
Exactly. Okay?
There's nothing short about it, but that's what they call it. If you don't use the correct form, then a bank or a financial institution does not have to legally recognize it. So you go in and say, oh, well, my mom signed this 5 years ago. Say, well, I'm sorry, that's the wrong form, and we're not allowed to let you use it. Well, now, if your mom is well into the deep stages of dementia or Alzheimer's, maybe she can't legally sign her name anymore. And if she doesn't know what she's doing, so it can be a serious problem for folks. So, you know, if you're the caregiving parent, child of the parent, dust off those documents and make sure they're up to date. And if you're not sure, because if you're not a lawyer, you probably don't know whether it's the correct form or not, you know, call us up and come on in and make an appointment, and we'll review these things before it becomes a problem for you and your family.
We
could use some more calls here. Right here, 476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you got a question about estate planning or elder law, give us a holler. Outside the local calling area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. Now, I've been reading recently, and I must tell you, I have not heard of any cases locally, but I don't really know for sure. But there are situations arise in people who are in nursing homes on Medicaid, where the nursing home, remember everybody got a $1,200 stimulus check, you know,
right. Mm-hmm. A
couple of months ago? All right. That was a COVID stimulus check. And actually, Congress is talking about doing another one sometime, whenever. My guess is they're going to time it close to the election. But be that as it may, some nursing homes have been taking the Medicaid patient's $1,200 stimulus check, and they're not allowed to do that. Okay? So if your mom or your dad or your aunt is in the nursing home, check what happened to their stimulus check, because a lot of these people, their money's going directly to the nursing home rather than into their checking account. So the nursing home is not allowed to keep that money, and it's not treated as income as far as Medicaid is concerned. So it shouldn't go to the nursing home, and it shouldn't go to Medicaid. They ought to be able to keep that money. It's non-countable income. So check it out, because if the nursing home has, for some reason, taken that money, they owe it back to you.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I noticed that there's actually articles out there, too, now that people can actually go see their loved ones in a nursing home, whereas everything was locked down for a while.
Yeah, New York just this week, I think, or just yesterday, it was very recently, mm-hmm. I believe you can, I'm not sure exactly what the rules are, mm-hmm. but you are allowed now to visit a person in a nursing home. I think there are limited hours when you can do it, mm-hmm. And I think there's a limit of either one or two. I think no more than two people can visit at once. I think there was something in the Times, if you look, I didn't see it in the Times Union this morning, I think it was. But I think the best thing to do is, and just because the governor said that this was okay, I should point out that probably each nursing home probably has its own protocol for visiting.
Right.
And so the best thing for you to do is call the nursing home directly before you go over there and find out what their policy is. So you don't go over there, you know, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and find out you can only visit between 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock, right? Because they may have limited hours. They may stagger, like it may be just every other, I don't know how they're doing it. It could be only every other room could come in sometimes because they still have to do all the social distancing and everything. And,
right.
And so the best thing is call the nursing home, the admissions office, or the front desk, and they'll tell you what the rules are.
Yeah, so that makes total sense. I mean, it makes sense anywhere you go just to call ahead to make sure that where you're going is actually open because there's different phases of opening depending on where you're going, too.
Exactly, exactly. They always are. And it's you know, it's a dilemma here. I mean, this whole thing is, I mean, you know, this whole COVID thing started back in February and March. I think everybody thought that, you know, by July, for heaven's sakes, we'd be through most of it. You know, well, much of the world is. I mean, I guess here in New York, I mean, you know, whatever your political persuasions are, but, you know, Governor Cuomo really brought this state around and showed us and the rest of the country the way to do it right. And the problem is a lot of states didn't do it right. And apart from whatever you feel about masking or not masking, you know, we're now one of the safest states to be in. And, you know, everybody said, oh, well, when it gets hot, there won't be any, the virus will die. Well, you know, Arizona, the temperature in Phoenix, Arizona yesterday was 118. And they had the biggest surge of cases in one day ever. So I guess the heat doesn't kill the virus. So we all got to, this, depressing as it is to think about, this is probably going to be with us for a long time to come. And this may be the new normal, or whatever. I hate that phrase, but
I know that's what you want to hear.
Right. Nothing about the way we're having to live right now is normal. It's not new normal. It's not normal. Period.
True.
So we got to come up with another word for it.
That's true, and they will, I'm sure. And we have started seeing clients too. There for a while, the offices weren't open to clients. We're still making sure that there's no overlap as far as the clients go. We are seeing them in our conference room, but the clients have to call before they come up because we don't have anybody in the waiting room, and we're wiping everything down and making sure everything's safe for our clients that want to come in. But we've got people that are coming into the Saratoga office, and you said you were in Clifton Park yesterday and the Albany office, and Dave was in Kingston, I think,
Kingston.
This week, too. So if you have been waiting because you wanted to meet with someone in person as opposed to over the phone or via Zoom, you can give our office a call, and Stacy can put you on the calendar and get you in to meet with one of the attorneys. Or if you've got stuff that you need to drop off, again, you need to call ahead because we're making sure we don't have any overlap of people. And we don't want to expose anybody to anything, but we're... Like Harry says, this is the new normal for now. So you can give our office a call at 518-465-7581. Stacy's at extension 126, and she can put time on any of the attorney's calendars. We still are available by phone, and the governor extended the remote notarization. So we still are doing document executions via Zoom. It's a really interesting thing to do, but if you're in the state of New York and we're doing your documents, we can actually watch you sign them through Zoom.
Yeah, and we've done a number of those, I mean, dozens and dozens of those over the last several months, and it worked well, especially for people who were actually in nursing homes because they were, like, in lockdown. And so if they had access to get a laptop with Zoom, we could actually sit in our office and watch them sign the papers and then witness them and notarize them remotely. I know I have a number of clients who just back in March when we had to shut down, you know, at least shut down the physical presence in the office, you know, they just wanted to wait because they, you know, they like coming in and sitting down and talking to you face to face. It's the better way to do things. But we've been very restricted in our ability to do that. But all four of our offices are now up and running, and we're available to meet with you in any one of those offices.
And if you want to,
I don't think Debbie goes to Kingston. Have you actually ever been to the Kingston office, Debbie?
I have not been to the new Kingston office. How many years ago did we move?
Two.
I've been with
one day we'll get you down there. David or I will take you down there.
We'll do a field trip, right? Field trip.
It's so much nicer than the old office, too. It's really
the old office. You know, I've been with the firm, 16 years? And mm-hmm. I think I've been to a Kingston office maybe 5 times.
Well, it's a long haul from Saratoga. That's why we don't make it down. We don't make it down there, okay? You're busy enough and very productive in the other three offices. Okay. 476-5900. We're coming up in a few minutes to a news break, but get your questions ready because we want to have a lot of calls in the second half hour. So the number is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And Ben will put you on hold, and you can come around in a few minutes, and we would love to talk to you. Once again, don't forget, those of you who got the invitation to our clients, the reason, if you're listening to the show and you're not a client of the office, the webinar that we're doing on Wednesday is limited to our clients, and we've been doing this for, God, I don't know, 10, 12 or more years. Every summer, spring or summer, we do a client presentation to express our appreciation for those of you who have chosen us to be your lawyers, and express our appreciation and update you on some important things that we think are important to know about. But as Debbie said, if you go on the website, there's like probably another dozen or more webinars that all of you can sign up for on various, are these all Webinar Wednesdays?
Webinar Wednesdays.
Yeah, although I think it's when August, there's one there. One of these, I don't know if it's July or August, but there's a battery of like one every day for one of the weeks. But you know, all different kinds of interesting topics that will give you all sorts of tidbits of information that hopefully you can take along and learn something, and it'll help you and your family get through all this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great opportunity to take your time and get your popcorn and, you know, your drinks, and it's like going to the movies. You can sit and watch a webinar.
You can't do anyway either.
All right, we are at 8:30. We are going to take a break right now. Second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm at our four conveniently located offices in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, Albany, and Kingston, New York. So we're here, as we have been for, I don't know, how long this show's been going on, probably more than 30 years. This show probably goes back to the late 1970s, and that would be 40 years, when our our retired partner, Shalom Kapovitz, started doing a show about, it was called Ask the Judge back then. he had, at one time, had a brief tenure as a police court judge in Cahoes. he was not on the Supreme Court of the Appellate Division, but but he was very pleased, and he was very impressed to be called Judge Kapovitz. And he may even still be listening. You never know. He's down in Florida. He's retired now, but he is he occasionally listens to the show, I'm told. And I believe actually signed up for one of our webinars recently.
He did. David, he was on a couple of the webinars.
I think David told me, or you told me, that he had signed up for one of the webinars, so that's cool. So he stays in touch with us, and we stay in touch with him. Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us this half hour, you can reach Debbie and I at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Outside the local calling area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800 WROW590.
So now, when we went to the break, we were talking about the client seminar that's the 15th. And right. If you are our client and you didn't get an invitation because everything went out snail mail, then you can call the office on Monday and we can get you hooked up. And the webinars that we have coming up, and it was funny because we were talking about them because Harry hasn't done any of the webinars yet. And we have a week of webinars. So on Monday, July 20th, it's on Elder Law Basics at 2 in the afternoon. On Tuesday, July 21st, 2 in the afternoon is Wills versus Trust, and that's the one that Harry and Dave are doing. So that's going to be the Harry and David show on Tuesday, July 21st on Wills versus Trust. And then Wednesday, the 22nd, is Medicare versus Medicaid. And Thursday, the 23rd, Aging in Place. And Friday, the 24th, your coronavirus checklist. Do I have everything I need to invent a health crisis? So there's a whole week of webinars that week. And then after that, we do them every Wednesday. We do two every Wednesday except for this coming week because of the client seminar. And then we'll have a week of webinars again in August. And everything is up on our website if you want to go there and sign up for the webinars. Or, again, you can watch them, go to our blog page, and we've got them pre-recorded there.
Yeah, so and since you can't go to the movies right now, you can watch us. It's like watching a movie. And, you know, Debbie, I think Debbie is the new Julia Roberts, you know?
I can only wish, right?
Dave and I are, let's see, what are we? We could be Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, right? Well, Paul Newman and Robert Redford. I'm older, so I'll be Paul Newman. He could be Redford, okay?
That works.
Until you can go back to the movies, that's, you know, this may be as good as it gets. Of course, there's always Netflix, I guess.
It's interesting. We're going to be talking, I mean, one of the topics that we have on our client webinar, we're going to be talking, well, I'm going to be talking anyway, about the Secure Act, which kind of just went out into nothingness. No one ever talks about it anymore because it came like before the coronavirus.
Overshadowed by coronavirus.
So, and it changed. It changed the minimum distribution age, right? Before, you had to start taking it at 70 and a half, and now you don't have to take it till 72.
Right.
So that was...
You're going to learn all about that stuff. And actually, and there have been a lot of changes that the government has issued in things like distributions and stuff. So that's going to be really important for... and Debbie's going to fill you in all that stuff at the client seminar on Wednesday.
Yeah, the CARES Act, that was one of the things that came out with the coronavirus. And one of the things, again, we're going to talk about this, is that you don't have to take your required minimum distribution this year. And the reason they're doing that, well, there's lots of different reasons they're doing it, but because a lot of people lost a lot of money in the stock market, right, and they have to maybe cash some of it in to take their required minimum distribution, that's why they're saying, well, if you don't have to, then don't take it. But then the other side of that is because of the loss in stock, right? You may be in a lower tax bracket, so maybe you do want to take it. So that's something that you got to kind of look at and weigh back and forth to decide what you really want to do.
All right. We have our second caller of the morning. It is Walter from Latham.
Good morning, Walter.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
All right. My question is, my sister sold her house, and she put it into a trust. And I am the trustee for that trust. And I'm going to invest it for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I know it's going to generate dividends and capital gains. Who does the paperwork for that, me or my sister?
Meaning the tax return?
Yeah.
It's an irrevocable trust. You're the trustee.
That's correct.
You're going to have to sign the tax return. But you can get a CPA to fill it out. But you, as a trustee, are going to have to sign it. But if it's a grantor trust, if it's an irrevocable trust that's a grantor trust, then she's going to report the taxes on her 1040 too, right? So you're going to do a 1041 for the trust, and then the income from the trust is reported on her income tax, her 1040.
Okay, great. That answers my question. That's kind of what I thought. Thank you very much for your help. You have a good day.
Did we?
You're welcome.
Call her? Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Go ahead, Harry.
I was just going to say, if we did the trust, I don't know if we did the trust or another law firm did the trust, but if we did the trust, his sister would have a little pamphlet that we gave her at the time she signed the papers for the trust that tells them exactly how to go ahead and prepare the tax return. And we also send out, because those fiduciary tax returns are also due on Wednesday if you haven't filed them for the trust. They really aren't that hard to fill out. Most people could probably fill them out themselves. Or if you have a tax preparer, they'll certainly fill them out for you. Or you can call and we'll answer some questions and things. We don't actually fill out the returns, but we can answer questions that you might have about it. It should be a grantor trust in that way, because you want the dividends and the capital gains taxed to the person who set up the trust. That's the person they call the grantor. We call them a settlor or a whatever. They're all the same thing. So we want the income taxed to that person because they're going to be in a lower tax bracket than a trust would be usually. If you have too much accumulated income in a trust, you get taxed at very high tax rates. So we set up our trust so they don't get taxed that way. They get taxed the most favorable way to the person who's actually getting the income. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean that's the best thing, because a trust generally pays a higher tax bracket. And you'd
what happens if you have more than $12,000 of taxable income in a trust? The trust is in a 36% tax bracket, whereas most of our clients are probably in a 10 or 15% tax bracket, or maybe a 20. But you wouldn't individually get into a 36% tax bracket unless your taxable income was more than about $425,000.
Which right. So you definitely need to look at those kind of things.
That's for sure. So listen, Debbie, you know what a DD-214 is?
Yes.
Okay. So when a DD-214, for those of you who were in the service, in the military, either in World War II, Korea, the Middle East wars in Iraq, a DD-214 is your discharge papers from the military. It's your certificate that you've been honorably discharged from the military. And in a lot of times when we're applying for Medicaid services, whether in a nursing home or for home care or some other types of veterans benefits which are available through the Veterans Administration, like the program that's called Aid in Attendance, you need to produce your DD-214, you know. Well, you know, if you got out of Korean War in 1955, and that's 45, so that's 65 years ago, a lot of people have misplaced or lost these things. They can't find them. I recently saw on a magazine I get about LSTs, which my father was on in World War II. There's a website now where if you don't have the National Personnel Records Center has a website where you can go on and get all your separation documents from the military. And it's, you know, www.archives.gov/veterans/military-service-records. So if you go on that, you can get a copy of your DD-214. I saw this in this magazine. It's called the LST Scuttlebutt, all right? do you know what an LST was?
That, nope, you got me there.
LST was a ship that was used. There were thousands of them in World War II, and it stood for LST stood for Landing Ship Tank. All right, also fondly called a long slow target, and they were used a lot in World War II. And my father was in the Navy, and he was on an LST in the South Pacific. He spent much of the war in China and Guam, Okinawa, Saipan, all the islands in the South Pacific that were fighting the Japanese. And there is an organization of people who were on LSTs. There aren't very many left alive anymore. And their family members. And they put out this little magazine like four times a year. And it has all kinds of interesting stuff in there about veteran stuff and things like that. But, you know, brought out worse. He was a navigator. He was a navigator on the ship. And very interesting. His commanding officer was a guy named Ethan Allen Hitchcock, who was the grandson or great-grandson of Ethan Allen, of the Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys in Vermont. Really interesting. And he was a lawyer in New York City who was one of the co-founders of the public television station. When they first public television opened up the public broadcasting system in New York, he was one of the founding members. Really interesting guy. Anyway.
That was your history lesson for the day, right?
That was your history lesson for the day, yeah. Well, people don't remember this stuff anymore. There are hardly any. I forget, there's only, maybe 100,000. There's very few survivors left who were veterans of World War II, men and women. There's a few of them left, but they're not too many anymore. That's for sure. Okay.
We'd love to have another call. If you guys want to give us a call at 518-476-5900, that's 518-476-5900. You can ask us questions about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. Jay Marie has really been getting a lot of guardianship cases. And especially when everything was in lockdown, because families didn't have access to their loved ones, right, that were in nursing homes, and so therefore they weren't able to do any paperwork with them. And we try to get people to avoid guardianship proceedings, you know, if at all possible, but in order to do that, you really need to plan ahead. You need to make sure that you have a valid power of attorney, which is what we were talking about earlier, that you need to make sure that you have the correct form, and you really do need the statutory gifts rider. Without that, it's very difficult to make transfers. I got a call from a client. Well, she's going to be our client. How about that? And the daughter called me, and she already has her mother on community Medicaid, and she said she had a power of attorney for her mother, and she's the one that faxed it over, and it was the wrong power of attorney form. And I said to her, you need to make sure that you do the new one, and mom wants to transfer the house over to her. So even if it was the correct form, if she didn't have the statutory gifts rider, she wouldn't be able to use the power of attorney to transfer the house to herself if the daughter needed to do the transfer as opposed to mom signing the deed. Right? Because it has the limited gifting of $500 if you don't have the statutory gifts rider.
Yeah, in fact, Medicaid, you know, a couple of years ago, Medicaid put out anybody who is preparing and filing a Medicaid application for a client has to have, they have to have a statutory gifting rider attached to it, or they're not going to. The problem is if you've made any transfers and you don't have the appropriate rider authorizing you to do it, Medicaid isn't going to recognize the transfers as legally valid, and in fact they're not. So all of your planning and transferring assets could be completely undone at the time you file the Medicaid application if you're doing it with a form that doesn't specifically authorize. It's hard for people to understand, because people say, oh well, I have power of attorney, so I can do anything. Well, no, you can't. You can't do anything. Because you can do almost anything except give away the person's money, all right? And even taking your mom and dad's assets and putting them into a trust that they're the beneficiaries of, something we don't normally think of as a gift, but legally it is a gift. It is a transfer. It is an uncompensated transfer from them individually into a trust, which is a future interest. So, you know, you have to do it right. It's really important. And most of you, everybody wants to do the right thing. Well, most everybody. But unless you went to law school, and even if you went to law school, unless you do a lot of Medicaid planning, you don't fully understand all the rules that have to be complied with in order to get the Medicaid applications prepared and filed. People say, oh, well, I think I'm just going to do it myself. And I say, you know, good luck with that, you know, because what happens frequently is people go ahead, they do it, you know, they don't want to spend the money, and they wind up spending three times as much because they screwed up their dad's Medicaid application, and it cost them three additional months of private pay, which is like about $45,000. So these things are not easy to do, and there are always little permutations, and people say, oh, well, it's just a cookie cutter. Every Medicaid application is different. It is not a cookie cutter deal. Everybody, we got to sit here and go through 5 years of your personal financial records and look at everything you did, every check you wrote for more than $2,000 now, I guess it is, every transfer, or every gift you made to your kids. If you bought your grandson a car, guess what? That's a gift, all right? And we're gonna have to explain it, document it, or it's going to cost some type of a financial penalty if it was done within 5 years. And so you could inadvertently go ahead and sign, file the Medicaid application, and you forgot that 4 years ago your parents gave your brother $25,000 to pay his lawyer to get a divorce, all right, because he didn't have the money. That's a gift, all right? It's not a loan. He didn't sign a promissory note agreeing to repay it. So when we sit down with you and we look at the Medicaid applications, we're going to ask you all those questions about what was this about, what was that about, and it's a complex process. It's not inexpensive to do these applications, but when you think of it in terms of the amount of comprehensive financial analysis that has to go on, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it, I think.
Totally worth it. And also, you know, we talk about Medicaid and everything like that. Wills are not cookie cutter either. I got a call this week from a lady that said, so I downloaded the will form from the internet, and I was like, okay. And I was like, and she said, and I looked at one website, and it said that a relative could sign the will, and I looked at another website, and it said a relative could not sign the will as a witness. And I want to use my aunt as a witness. Can I do that? And so I started asking her questions. And come to find out, the person that was making the will, that she was helping make the will, was actually not her father. It was her stepfather. And so I told her, you know, she said, well, you know, he doesn't have a relationship with his kids, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, so you could get yourself in big trouble, because if you are the one that's drafting the will, he's signing it, and then you're having your aunt as a witness, right? And he's leaving everything to you, not his children. I said, they're going to contest the will, right? That's why you need to really have a professional to do these kind of documents, because they could say that, you know, it was undue influence, right? That you influenced them to do the will, and then your aunt was in cahoots with you, and sure, she's one of the witnesses to the will. So you got to be really careful about these things, because if you start downloading forms from the internet, number one, you've got to be really, really careful that everything is executed properly with witnesses and with notaries, and you need to make sure that there's not issues with execution of the will, right? Who are the witnesses? And people that witness the will, they witness their parents' will, their parents left them everything, and they're a witness to the will. Guess what they're getting? Zero. So you got to be really careful about these things. And also, if you have a will and you start marking it up, right, you have your original will, and you're like, oh, well, you know, Sally got married, so I'm changing her last name on the will, or I don't want to, my sister's dead, so I'm going to mark through that part. by marking on your original will, you voided the entire instrument. You don't have a will anymore. So you have to be really
careful.
No, those
things are, you deem to have revoked it. In fact, by marking it up, under the law, you probably have revoked your will. And now you don't have a will, as Debbie said. So your money's, the state of New York's going to say where your money goes.
And
that's probably not where you want it to go.
Yeah, so you got to be really careful about these things because, you know, everybody's the do-it-yourselfer now, right? It's like, kind of like we were talking earlier, it's like you run over to Home Depot and you're going to do this stuff yourself. You're going to do your own tile.
Which is well-intentioned. And, you know, if you know how to do that stuff, well, I admire people who can do their home repairs and things like that. I really do. I can't, you know, I barely know how to change a light bulb, but I can still do that. But
that's good.
Yeah.
But you can't do your own documents, okay? And I had people yesterday that they actually have a cousin who's an attorney that did the power of attorney for them, which is great. Any attorney can do a power of attorney, but they didn't do the statutory gifts rider. Right? So everything was executed
perfectly. Probably not an estate planning attorney. He's probably not an estate planning attorney.
But they did. The power of attorney was perfectly fine unless they need to gift something over $500, which they're talking about having to transfer a house. It seems like it's always the house that needs to be transferred. And I said, well, you guys can't do that unless the house is worth less than $500, which I doubt if it is. So.
Hope not.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you have to understand that the law of wills and trusts, these are not federal laws. They are state laws. And every state is a little different. I mean, every state recognizes wills and trusts. But the way a will is executed in New York is different than the way a will is executed in Florida. And it's different than the way a will is executed in Vermont. In Vermont, you need three witnesses to a will, not two. It's always been three in Vermont. I remember we used to have... So if you're downloading a will from the Internet, you may not even know or be aware of whether or not it's a valid will in New York State. It could be a will from a California website. Well, you know, and you download it, and then people find these things. I've seen them. They brought them in. I'm sure you've seen them, Debbie. They're full of blanks that they haven't filled in, you know, and where property goes and who's this and who's that. So it's dangerous. It is dangerous to use these websites for free, and it's equally dangerous to use these form stores that sell you a will package for $69, you know, on TV, because they claim to have been, and they may have been prepared by lawyers, but they're not giving you any legal advice in terms of the preparation and the proper execution of those things. You're just kind of buying a box of forms, and you're really on your own about those things. So, as Sergeant Esterhaus always said on Hill Street Blues, let's be careful out there, all right?
That's an oldie but a goodie, huh?
Anybody remember Hill Street Blues? It was one of my favorite shows. That and L.A. Law.
Oh, L.A. Law. I loved that show. Love that show.
Yep, definitely.
That's why I went to law school, because I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be
Arnie. I want to be Arnie, the divorce lawyer. Remember Arnie?
Yes.
The divorce lawyer.
No, see, I wanted to be Stuart Markowitz. I wanted to be the tax lawyer that just sat in the office and did taxes and never had to go to court. So.
Really?
Yeah.
It turns out
like,
you.
Huh?
You're not that type at all. You're not the green eye shade type at all. You're a people person.
I know, but I do look good in green. The green eye shade would have worked for me. But anyway.
Well, you actually know a lot about tax. Didn't you used to teach a course on tax at Siena, didn't you? And weren't you an adjunct at Siena, and you taught some courses there? It's got to be 8-10 years ago or more.
Actually, it was at Albany. It was University of Albany, and then when I lived in Syracuse, I taught at Cazenovia College. So, yeah.
Okay.
But I don't do that anymore. The tax laws change so much that, you know, you've really got to keep on top of it. And
well, we have, of course, David Kubicki, and one of the partners in the firm, has a master's of tax in tax law from NYU. I mean, he's really the tax guy in the firm. And Jay Marie has is she a CPA or?
She has an accounting background.
Okay. Because, yeah, I mean, she really is, Jay Marie really is the tax guru in the office. David has a degree. Jay Marie has on the job experience. But they really, you know, when you're doing this stuff with taxes and especially asset transfers, which we do a lot in Medicaid planning, you have to know what the tax. When we transfer our houses or stocks, all these things potentially have tax consequences beyond the protection that we're seeking to get for the Medicaid program. Some of these transactions have tax consequences that you need to be aware of or that you need to avoid. And half the lawyers that do this stuff don't know a single thing about taxes. And worse yet, you use some person who used to be a paralegal in a law firm who's now out doing Medicaid applications and transfers for people and has no idea what they're doing beyond filling out a bunch of paperwork and not really understanding the underlying legal significance of transferring mom's house and $500,000 somewhere, you know, to family members or trusts and things like that. You have to really have a fairly deep tax base to understand and explain to the client what all this means down the road. So
we don't do the tax returns. We refer those out to CPAs because that's not what our forte is. We're attorneys, and although we can
we're not accountants.
Advice, no, mm-hmm. We're definitely not CPAs, and so we're going to refer you out to someone to do your tax returns. We can give you knowledge as to how it affects everything, but as far as, you know, we don't know the specifics of people's investments and stuff like that. That's why I always say that the best thing you can do is have an attorney, a CPA, an investment person that are all on the mm-hmm. same page, that are all working together to make sure that everything flows the way it's supposed to. Because if you have all three and they're all working together, everything can go perfectly. But if you have the three and they're not communicating, then each of the three of us might undermine what the other person has done. Oh, it sounds like
exactly
we're coming
right.
to the end.
Well,
so have a great weekend. Stay dry.
We'll talk to you next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.